East Haven police made a giant leap in a 50-year-old cold case. Captain Murgo with the East Haven police on the show now. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good. Congratulations on this break.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. It's a lot of hard work from a lot of different people, so thank you very much. We all appreciate it.
So 1975, this 18-year-old girl's found dead.
Yeah, August 16th.
Wrapped in a tarp. Hogtied on the side of the highway.
Wow.
Yeah, August 16th, 1975. Just like you said, bound, gagged, wrapped in a tarp, found in a drainage ditch behind the old Bradley's, what is now CarMax. And, I mean, it really haunted the community at the time.
So bring us through this girl's life. She was from Idaho?
Yeah, born in Idaho Falls, Idaho, in 1965. And she was born in 1957. And she was, you know, born into a military family and relocated to the East Coast in the 1960s. She spent some time in Philadelphia, but ended up ultimately in New Jersey. And at some point, you know, mom passes away in 1968. So mom dies even before she goes missing, and dad remarries. At some point after that, she gets sent to a boarding school in the Monticello, New York area, Sullivan County, New York. And, you know, we don't know exactly what boarding school she went to, and that's part of the investigation, and that's what we're looking
for. Then how do you know she went to a boarding school?
So the very few people are still alive that had intimate knowledge of her life, but one of the people who are still alive is her stepmother. And over the years, her stepmother was able to provide bits and pieces of information to her sister, Marianne, who never gave up the search and finding her. So, you know, once we identified her, we saw that there was podcasts on this missing woman, and there was Facebook pages, you know, dedicated to finding her. And once we scoured all those Facebook pages, we found a timeline of her life, and we learned this bit of information.
And how you and the East Haven Police Department found her identity is incredible in itself. But let's go back to boarding school. She runs away from boarding school.
Yep. So meets a friend. Again, we don't know who that friend is, and we're looking for somebody to reach out to us with that friend's name. But, yeah, meets a friend who allegedly has family up in Maine and runs away. But, you know, in the 60s and early 70s, if you didn't have a car, you didn't have money to travel via bus or train, you hitchhiked.
Yep.
And, you know, we think that's what led to, you know, her ultimate death was either hitchhiking to Maine, possibly getting to Maine, spending some time out in Maine, and then trying to get back home and hitchhike from Maine.
Which side of the highway? If she was found on the CarMax side, that would be the side suggesting she's coming back from Maine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, but we tend to believe that, you know, whoever killed her had, you know, intimate knowledge of the area. It wasn't as built up as it is today.
That's interesting.
You know, so
right. Why would you say that?
Just because of where it was. She was bound and gagged and wrapped pretty intricately, and you could tell that the person who did it took some time to do it. So we don't think the crime scene was right where she was found. We think she was killed somewhere else. But just, you know, just where she was found, we just think
it wasn't something an out-of-state trucker would find or know of. You'd have to get off the highway, kind of know it was there.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're thinking
of
someone from the East Haven / surrounding area.
You know, so in the 70s, when this case was fresh and hot, they developed a suspect. And the suspect, believe it or not, had ties to Maine and East Haven, which we just found out once we, you know, discovered her identity. So that's a very interesting piece of it.
Yeah. This suspect is still a suspect, or being looked at?
He was never cleared, you know, and it's no secret because it was widely reported over the years. You know, he was convicted of a homicide in Maine and spent many years in prison and was released in 2009.
Yep. So. Holy crap.
So still alive.
Still alive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Still alive.
Wow.
Yep, living out of state at the moment. So.
Do you know where he is now?
We do. Yeah, we do.
Ah. Yeah. So, does he get a knock on the door in the next look over day or so?
You want to talk to again?
Talk to questioning or?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, again, we have shifted now to the homicide side of it. You know, first we wanted to focus on locating her body in the State Street Cemetery, and that brought a whole host of challenges because she was in an unmarked grave. And, you know, in June of 2022, we thought we had found the location, and we exhumed the body, and it was the wrong body, you know. So our focus was finding her, which is behind us now.
How did you know it was the wrong body?
You know, originally we thought we were looking for a metal casket in a sea of wooden caskets. And after we got the ex-cemetery director to the State Street Cemetery with a sounding rod and with burial records and the map, we thought we found a metal casket.
Metal casket.
And again, back then they were primarily wooden caskets. So we converged on the State Street Cemetery.
Why was she in a metal casket?
So she was buried in what they call a Ziegler casket, and a Ziegler casket, if you see, you know, service members who are killed in the line of duty overseas, and you see that those heartfelt pictures of them coming back to America, you know, one by one with the flags draped over them, those metal type caskets. Non-ornate metal caskets. That's what she was buried in.
Was that because she was murdered and she wasn't identified, or how does she end up in that?
Or there was in the military?
Yeah. So, you know, when you have family and they take care of your arrangements, they tend to, you know, purchase a really nice ornate casket, the type of caskets that we're used to seeing at wakes and funerals.
Yeah.
But there was nobody to claim her body, and she had been up at the medical examiner's office for a year. And when the East Haven Memorial buried her in 1976, they put her in the Ziegler casket.
Oh, wow.
I can only imagine it was a dollars and cents thing back then.
Yeah.
That turns out to be a good thing for your investigation, right? Because I would think that casket's preserved her.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, so we thought that would be a good thing because, you know, how hard is it to find that type of casket, again, in a sea of wooden caskets? But when we came back, you know, so one of the trips to the cemetery was with the United States Department of Agriculture who brought the ground-penetrating radar, and we just found way more caskets than we originally thought. And we found caskets that were stacked on top of caskets and caskets that were all in unmarked graves and caskets that were, you know, packed next to each other. And there was a ton of Ziegler caskets in that area.
Oops. So yeah. You found a whole nother problem over at that cemetery.
Yeah.
It wasn't a tree we were going to bark up. I'll tell you that much. You know, we were mission driven to find our Jane Doe.
Right.
And we were lucky to have done it because, you know, the second time, okay, to not find it a second time, to go back a third time, I mean, that would have been a hard sell, especially to the, you know, to the courts and to the judges for another search warrant and everything else, you know. So we're grateful that we found it the second time around.
Captain Murgo, East Haven Police, is on talking about this giant leap in a cold case there where they identified an 18-year-old woman who was murdered and left on the side of the highway in 1975. So what started this? Has this always been investigated, or did somebody say, we're going to start going through our cold cases? How do you decide to go and exhume that body?
Yep. So it's been worked on, you know, periodically over the years by several generations of detectives. And I'm confident that this would have been solved years ago, but the technology just wasn't there. You know, technology had to catch up. So in 2020, Myself and Captain David Emmerman, we were promoted to captains, and just our schedule and our new job description just allowed for the flexibility to take a look at some of the things that had never been solved, or some of the things that we always wanted to jump into but never had an opportunity to do, and this was at the top of our list.
Wow!
You know, every time you come to the police department as a new guy, you always hear this story about the unidentified female found behind Bradley's. And, it was always something that we wanted to do, and we knew that the technology was there, and we thought we really had a good opportunity to get this done.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's great.
Great work.
It is really, what a shot in the arm for the entire department.
Yeah.
To ID this person, just for
years.
The family.
Yeah.
I know, I read up on the story of the family, and again, no technology. So they thought, the internet sleuths were leading them to the Dune lady in New Jersey. They thought, oh, it's probably the Dunes lady.
Okay.
After listening to the podcast, that was the big focus in the podcast, was the Lady of the Dunes murder. And I looked it up, and she had gotten identified sometime in 2022. So I could only imagine how devastating it was to them, thinking that this could be her, and then hearing the news. Definitely happy for the family who got closure. But back to the drawing board for this family who thought that this was, really could be her. So
you and your buddy, partner, you say, all right, we're going to go after this. We're going to start doing this cold case. You go through all this hell trying to find the casket in the cemetery. You find it, and then you get, how do they connect her to someone else? It was the sister had her DNA in a system somewhere?
Yep. So the sister's the real hero in this whole story. I guess the interesting part to this whole case is that for 45 or 46 years, Patricia Newsom was never reported missing, right? And it wasn't until 2021 where her sister Marianne decided to upload her DNA to a site called GEDmatch. And GEDmatch is a genealogy database, and it gives you the opportunity to allow law enforcement to access this information for these types of purposes. And, encountering dead end after dead end, her sister Marianne said, this is the next logical step. I'm going to upload my DNA to GEDmatch, going to create an account, a missing persons account, on another site called Namus, and we'll see what happens. So had we done this in 2020,
it wouldn't have reported missing.
Wow.
Because she was 18, she left. It's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, just figured she just left.
People thought she just went and lived wherever.
A different life.
She's living her life.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's pretty
freaky. Who knows? Family dynamics are different. And, it's just maybe they thought that she, ran off with somebody and is living life somewhere else.
Oh, man. This makes more sense now why it was never put together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So she was never on any radar for the police.
Exactly.
Never on. No. Especially back then.
Right.
There was nobody looking for her, and so we always found that strange because you can tell that she had extensive dental work. Back in a time where a lot of people maybe didn't, we could tell that she had braces, she had orthodontic work, and she was young. So investigators were puzzled because you had somebody who put a lot of, a lot of effort and love into her to make her cosmetically look really good and stuff. And it was just like, why isn't anybody looking for her?
Because
somebody cared for her.
Right.
Yeah, somebody cared for her at some point. There's definitely a family out there that loves this girl. They just didn't understand why nobody was coming out.
And that's why.
Captain Margo with the East Haven Police Department's on. We're talking about this giant leap in one of their cold cases. Is this the oldest cold case in East Haven?
There are several unsolved homicides from the 80s, one or two in the 90s. But this is definitely, I don't know of any, maybe in the 30s or 40s, but I don't know of any that are this old. No.
So you have a suspect that's never been cleared. or a person of interest that's never been cleared.
Yes.
You know where this person is.
Yes.
Has anyone with the East Haven Police or other police departments spoken to this person since your discovery of the identity?
Not since the discovery. You know, investigators have spoken to this individual, primarily when he was incarcerated for that other homicide over the years.
Does he still live in Connecticut?
No. Nope, he's out of state.
Gotcha. Yeah. Are there any plans to have a conversation?
Yeah. So, you know, we are focused now on the homicide piece of it, and part of that will be to go back at any suspects that we had over the years, and he's definitely at the top of our list.
And was there any DNA found on the body that can connect him to this crime?
Again, in 1975, investigatory tactics were a lot different. So, you know, we don't think we have much DNA other than the DNA to identify her to really support our case at the moment.
Yeah. If you did, would you actually tell me or no?
just like yesterday, I may just say, it's under investigation.
Right, right, right. The vague answer.
Yeah. If this guy's listening, you want him to think that there might be something there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where 48 years ago, they just weren't looking for DNA, you know.
Right.
But there are some other pretty really great key pieces of evidence that we do have.
Oh.
You know, so... fingers crossed. We got this far. There's no way we're going to
really
stop.
Really incredible.
Now.
Yeah,
but you got this far. It's really, really great police work. This is, you know, this is what you go to, I think, police academy for.
Seriously,
for these moments in your career.
Yep.
It's definitely a pinnacle moment, you know, in my career, especially because you heard about it your whole career. You know, it's just one of those things that always loomed over the town of East Haven, and we're just glad that we're able to bring some sense of closure to her family. It feels really good.
Any police, is there anyone still on the job that was part of the original investigation?
So Bruce Scobie is a detective with us. He recently retired, but he's still a supernumerary. You still see him out there directing traffic on road jobs and things like that. He was one of the investigators that led the charge, and retired Lieutenant Joe Izzo. He is still around. He moved down south. I'm pretty jealous of that. But he always stuck with the case. You know, so a few other people that really had something to do with finding her was retired Sergeant Tony Grigo. He never gave up on the case, and he's the one that actually got us in touch with the ex-cemetery director, who brought us to the general area of where she was buried. So that's why I say it's a collective effort. We can't take the credit, you know, just us, because there were so many people that never gave up on this girl. And it's just really so great to see that, and so great to bring this to everybody that worked so hard on the case.
I love that whoever it is who did this, if they are still alive, they now know you guys are
getting closer.
Within breathing distance.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You can get away with it. And it's not one person. It's not a podcast. It's a team. It's a whole community at this point.
Yeah. So, really great job. And before I let you go, Captain, when we hang up, will you be sending out any press releases?
722.
So let me apologize, because that was by design, and I think you guys
know
that.
Oh, I know it was. Yeah, no detective work here.
We hang up with him on one thing yesterday, and the press release on this goes out.
Yeah, we saw the one immediately.
That's showbiz, baby, right?
That is show business. My regret yesterday talking to you about that home invasion is we never talked about the one guy's haircut.
Oh, yeah. Oh man.
I know. There's a whole segment there. But all right. Well, you guys have been really doing a great job over
killing
there.
Killing it, man. You're killing it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it. These
Captain.
Guys are all working hard. So thank you so much.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.